Case for argument today is United States against Ali.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Mr. Cohn.
There are very, very few issues in this case. One of it is that a statement was made to the defendant which would cause him to have confusion and mislead him concerning the acceptance of responsibility, which would therefore interfere with her being a knowing and voluntary plea. Ms. Murphy, the prosecutor, stated...
Mr. Cohn, I'm puzzled by your brief. We rejected the Anders brief for a single reason. That is, that there was an apparent discrepancy of $600,000 in the restitution award.
Right.
Your brief, on the other hand, covers all the issues that prior counsel told us were frivolous and doesn't mention the only non-frivolous issue we identified in the case.
Well, I
Was
think
there some strategic thinking behind this?
I think that as to that $600,000, I think the government corrected that in the district court. Originally, there was an assessment of $4,900,000, and the government realized that they made a mistake. And that was corrected in the district court.
Has the district court's judgment been amended?
Yes, I believe so.
Certainly not mentioned in your brief.
I don't think it's a rule that's relevant. And maybe it is relevant in the sense that in my argument that the evidence presented was sufficiently confusing and based on assumptions that even the government was confused by what the amount was, and the first time there was an incorrect amount under the government's later recognition of theory. We're waiting for Your Honor to...
I don't have any more questions. We will find out whether it's been amended.
Okay. As I started to say, Your Honor, during the allocation and explaining the matter to the defendant, Mrs. Murphy said, the government will not object to 3 point for acceptance of responsibility, assuming that defendant continues to accept responsibility within the meaning of the guidelines for his conduct, i.e., if the government proves up a certain amount of loss, the defendant can contest that solely by contesting whether, and that's confusing to a lay person. It's not sufficiently clarified that the plea would be knowing and to a lay person, especially a lay person whose English is a secondary language to him. And there's a case that I have not cited, but if I have authority to cite it, and at least to Your Honor, it's different, but it's somewhat analogous, and that's Castillo versus U.S. citation, that 34 Fed 3rd 443 opinion by Posner, and he talks about how people, especially in a different language, might be confused about what something means here. And the government is saying that this was an issue, the issue of not knowing waiver, not knowing the substances was not raised below. When was the opportunity to raise it? It was raised on appeal. There's no doubt that it was raised on appeal. And it would only be raised below by a motion for new trial by the lawyer who was the same lawyer. Do you have any questions on that issue? The other issue relates to the sufficiency of the evidence, especially when it comes to the amounts. It's very clear that the sufficiency of evidence was obtained in this case through one expert who wasn't really an expert and didn't consider everything and didn't know everything. And the cross-examination of her shows that. When she's asked, how did she comply? How did she say comparable stores? And she says, well, I look for stores within the same zip code, stores with a similar or comparable reporting annual sales, and stores that had a large annual report for sales and comparison purposes. And that's not a rational basis, I think, for making comparison. She also was asked many times if she had ever questioned any of the alleged participants, not the agents, but not participants who were involved with receiving matter, food stamps. She says, no, she never did. How does she know what actually happened here? It's just her surmise. Even the court was a little bit confused. And a question by the then defense lawyer of England. And from your investigation, you didn't know how much product was brought into the store through cash remuneration to the per surveyor? Answer, no. And other questions. She's just speculating. And it was this speculation that was used to convict the defendant. And that's why even the judge and the probation officer came up to a conclusion that originally the government recognized was very different. As to the acceptance of responsibility, there was not a full and complete hearing on that. And I think, therefore, as to the amount assessed against the defendant, the matter should be reversed separately, even though this was a plea of guilty, and although many of things were explained to the defendant, others were not. And because of what was not explained to the defendant, as to how the guidelines would apply, especially apply, the conviction should be reversed. I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Cohen. Ms. Murphy.
May it please the Court, opposing counsel. Good afternoon. I'm Madeline Murphy, appearing on behalf of the United States, and I'm asking this Court to...
Has the judgment been amended to reflect the $4.2 million instead of the $4.9 million restitution?
The district court did amend the judgment, but amended the judgment under circumstances where it did not have proper jurisdiction. So it has acknowledged the error, but...
It did it after the appeal, the notice of appeal was filed?
Your Honor, after this Court's order... rejecting the Anders brief, pointed out this error to me. I had sought advice on how to bring this before the district court, and I don't believe that the advice that I received was correct. It was in part to approach the district court and ask the district court if, had it had jurisdiction, would it make a particular change in that. And I don't believe the district court understood me that we were asking for simply an advisory opinion, as it were. So the district court did amend the judgment commitment order under circumstances where it didn't actually have jurisdiction. So I'll be asking this court to remand this case to the district court so that the error in the judgment commitment order can be amended formally with appropriate jurisdiction to reflect the appropriate restitution amount.
Thank you.
Is it true, Ms. Murphy, as the defendant asserted in his pro se reply brief, that he's never been given access to any of Star Foods' business records?
That's not correct, Your Honor. Shortly after the case was indicted in 2002, I invited defense counsel to tell me how they wanted to approach this issue, either to come in and examine all of these documents that we had, whether they wanted me to send them out to be copied, or how they wanted to handle this. Defense counsel did come in on at least one occasion to examine these documents. Mr. Ali actually came in on more than one occasion himself to examine these documents. They never approached me for copies of the documents, and in the interim of the forfeiture proceeding, I just gave them all of the documents. We had a truck come and bring the 70 boxes of documents over to Mr. England's office. So, number one, these were not exculpatory documents in the first place, and number two, the defense certainly had adequate access to them and finally had complete and total possession and control over them before the conclusion of the forfeiture proceeding.
And on pages 9 and 10 of his reply brief, he asserted that Agent Swain failed to include the markup in her calculations in that Exhibit 18. Have you looked at that to see if it's true?
Judge, I looked at his pro say reply brief, I was unable to find that particular exhibit that he was referring to. And he had actually, Your Honor, waived all of these arguments, number one, by never bringing them up before the district court, and number two, by never addressing them in his principal brief.
And is it really true that Agent Swain only looked at 10 out of 1,460 daily folders?
That is correct, Your Honor. We had a number of different types of documents that we recovered from the defendant's place of business in which we could examine to try to determine what, if any, amount of cash was spent on food stamp eligible items. We found 16 months' worth of bank reconciliations that addressed on a month-by-month basis purchases that were made of stock for the store. We examined those 15 months' worth of bank reconciliations, and we determined that there was absolutely no indication that any cash, excuse me, Your Honor, had ever been used to buy food stamp eligible stock for the store. So we looked again for other circumstances that might prove that cash had been used to buy stock for the store, examined receipts and what have you that we found in the defendant's place of business, and we spot-checked the remaining period of time beyond that 16-month period of time to see if in these daily reconciliation folders we could find any instance where there was an indication that cash had been used to purchase any food stamp-eligible stock. We were unable to find any. When the defense cross-examined Ms. Swain on this issue, even though they had possession of all of these documents, they did not bring in a single one of these documents. They did not rebut her testimony, in essence. They did not produce a single one of these daily reconciliation folders showing that cash had been used to buy any food stamp-eligible items.
Thank you, Ms. Murphy.
You're welcome, Your Honor. Mr. Ali claims that his plea was not knowing and voluntary because he contends that the elements of the offense were not appropriately set forth at the time of the colloquy. In fact, they were appropriately set forth. The elements of the wire fraud offense were a scheme to defraud, an intent to defraud, and the use of the wires. If you will look at the transcript of his plea colloquy, all of these elements were adequately examined. If there was a deficiency, it may have been in addressing the wire aspect of the charge. I, in looking back, realized that I forgot to include the words in Texas in referring to the out-of-state company that handled the administrative aspect of the reimbursement to the individual store owners. However, this issue was covered during the forfeiture proceeding and also covered during the government's version of the offense and the preparation of the pre-sentence investigation report. So the court certainly had ample evidence from which to decide whether the government had adequately met its burden and had adequately set forth all of the elements of the charge during during the course of the plea. Though Mr. Ali claims that his plea was not knowing and voluntary because of this alleged error in setting forth the elements of the offense and his contention that he did not adequately receive a warning of what his potential penalties would be, he has never argued that but for these alleged errors, he would not have entered his guilty plea. And since the errors, if there were any, were harmless in terms of the elements of the offense, and since he was, as the transcript shows, very thoroughly advised as to what the maximum possible penalties he faced were, and since he has never made that showing or that claim that other than these, he would never have entered a guilty plea, under these circumstances, his guilty plea ought to be allowed to stand. Turning to the restitution and forfeiture aspects of the case, the government addressed the restitution, the amount of loss for sentencing purposes, and forfeiture in one proceeding. The defense claims that the district court erred in finding that $2.56 million was the appropriate forfeiture amount, and also in finding that $4.29 million was the appropriate amount of loss for calculating restitution and for calculating the defendant's guideline range. This court has addressed the appropriate manner in which to calculate the forfeiture amount and the amount of loss in food stamp cases in a number of cases, including but not limited to U.S. versus Haddad. Agent Swain's method in determining the appropriate forfeiture amount and amount of loss track very closely those methods that have been used and have been affirmed in prior cases before this court. The defendant had every opportunity on cross-examination during the joint forfeiture and sentencing loss hearing to address any deficiencies he felt were in her analysis. And though he claims now that there were all sorts of errors in there, those errors were not put to the district court. The district court had the opportunity to listen to Ms. Swain, to assess her credibility, and to assess her methods. And the court found her credible and found that her methods were viable and that they produced an appropriate restitution and forfeiture amount. Under these circumstances, unless there are any questions the court may have, I ask that the district court's decision to accept the plea be affirmed, the district court's determination that the forfeiture amount is approximately $2.56 million be affirmed, and the district court's amount of loss for the purposes of restitution and sentencing calculation of $4.29 million be affirmed, but that the case be remanded for the limited purpose of addressing that clerical error in that the current judgment and commitment order reads $4.9 million. In restitution when it ought to read $4.2 million. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Cohen?
Yes.
Please refrain from talking until you reach the podium.
Number one, the reason why the defendant filed a pro se brief was because I was ill for most of this year, and I set that out in motions. I couldn't help that. Two words say that the government expert is wrong. And those two words are, government spot checked something. If there are 70 boxes of documents, you can't rely on a spot check to be sure that one box has the right things or another box has the right things. And so the government has they failed to prove the proper amounts. And that's my only other thing.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cohen. The case is taken under advisement and the